Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. With the shaken European markets causing tremors on Wall Street and the stock market dropping 513 points after a week of losses, we will talk with former Wall Street banker William Cohen, who covers Wall Street for Fortune, Vanity Fair, and the New York Times. He recently wrote the book Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. Then economist Randall Ray joins us for a macroeconomic analysis of adverse economic trends at home and abroad amid dire predictions of a double-dip recession in the United States and defaults in Europe. We'll try to connect the dots and see if we are indeed at a Smoot-Hawley moment where the Congress, instead of reversing economic decline, has accelerated it. Then historian Robert McIlvain, the author of The Great Depression, America 1929 to 1941, joins us to explore further analogies between what happened to prolong the Great Depression and actions just taken on Capitol Hill that most analysts say will deepen and drag out the recession. Joining us now is William Cohen, author of the new book Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. William Cohen is a contributing editor at Fortune and a writer for Vanity Fair and the New York Times, where he covers financial issues. His acclaimed book, House of Cards, A Tale of Hubris and Wretched Excess on Wall Street, details the last days of Bear Stearns and Company, and he worked on Wall Street for over a decade and a half, both at Laissez Faire and J.P. Morgan Chase. In 2007, he published The Last Tycoons, The Secret History of Laissez Faire and Company. Welcome to Background Briefing, William Cohen.
Hey, nice to be here, Ian.
And what kind of a day is this in terms of the, you know, the reasonably frequent meltdowns on Wall Street? This is 513-point drop after a week of losses. Everybody's saying it's the worst since the crash of 2008. What's your take on it?
Well, first of all, I mean, your point about these episodes happening with increasing frequency is an important one. I mean, yes, okay, it's the worst one since 2008. That was only fewer than three years ago, and already we're into another round of crisis. And I think it goes to, unfortunately, the rapidity, the seriousness of these crises, and how quickly they come, and why we don't do anything in the interim to try to prevent it from happening again. I mean, it's a scary day to some extent, but it's also, I think, a very healthy day, because I think that there's no question that the stock market, since March of 2009, has increased from something like 6,500 on the Dow to close to 12,700, 12,800 before this correction over the past week. And so, I mean, I think, you know, it had risen almost twice in the period of just over 2.25 years, and I think that is an extremely rapid rise and one that called out for a correction. I mean, you know, let's not forget, Ian, I mean, you're south of Silicon Valley, but, I mean, you know, we're going through this extraordinary period over the last 6 months where these, you know, social networking companies have been valued at increasingly nosebleed-type valuations. I mean, in January of this year, Goldman Sachs put in new money into Facebook that valued Facebook at $50 billion, and already 6 months later, people are talking about it being worth $100 billion. And then there's Groupon and Twitter and LinkedIn and, you know, the Zynga. The list goes on and on. And so people were talking about this return of the bubble mentality, and that's a reference to stocks being overpriced. So I think it's, you know, while it's scary, I think it's utterly healthy for our markets and our economy.
Well, William Cohen, some people think, though, it's a sign of worse things to come. Alan Sinai, the chief global economist at Decisions Economics, he's making the analogy with Japan. In other words, we had the subprime meltdown here, and he's saying much as the end of the real estate boom in Japan in the 1990s set that country up for the so-called lost decade, the realization is dawning on the world that the future of the United States is bleak.
I often find, Ian, that it's very hard to predict the future, right? I mean, so we don't know whether
that's Yogi Berra, right?
We don't know whether somebody like Alan Sinai, who's obviously very respected, in this instance is more like a broken clock that's right twice a day, or whether in fact he is accurately summarizing the situation in the future. But let's just take the events of the last week. Okay, we've unfortunately had to bear witness to this horrendous debacle in Washington, this utter self-inflicted wound where, you know, the Tea Party, members of the Republican Tea Party brought us to, you know, within days of default on our debt obligations. So, you know, at the end of the last 2 weeks, the bond market has basically, for lack of a better word, been freaking out. And people didn't know whether to, you know, buy into treasuries because the treasuries market has always been sort of the last bastion of safety, or to flee treasuries because they're about to be defaulted on. So you had this, you know, totally schizophrenic behavior, and then it gets resolved on Sunday night, Monday, and Tuesday, and all of a sudden treasuries are looking safe again, and people had been fleeing treasuries and putting money in the stock market because the stock market, you know, provided yields, provided returns that the bond market wasn't providing because it was so overpriced and people had driven down the yields to such low levels. And so the crisis gets resolved and people say to themselves, you know what, Treasury securities are back being safe again, and I'll put my money there even though the yields are low, and I'll take it out of this risky stock market, because which has gone, by the way, from 6,500 to 12,700, because I'm not sure what's going on in the world economy. We've got, you know, disasters brewing in Greece, Italy, Spain, Ireland, Iceland, Portugal, and, you know, often these things get exported, and if you look to history, they often get exported around the world. Just like our mortgage crisis got exported around the world, their problems could get exported around the world, and we were in the process of incurring a self-inflicted wound, and, you know, people just said, okay, we've avoided that, now I'm going to take some risk off the table. And so it's inevitable that they would take it out of stocks, which are incredibly high priced. If you look at a 10-year average of P.E. ratios of U.S. stocks, right now we're still close to 21 times 10-year rolling average, when it should be closer to 19 times if you look at the history. And so there's still more to fall here. I mean, stocks have been going up without really any correction since March of 2009. And so this was, you know, long overdue, frankly.
Again, I'm speaking with William Cohan, the author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. And we're talking about, of course, the drop of on the Wall Street today of 513 points on the Dow, dropping an average of 4.3% during the day. Standard & Poor's 500 index lost 4.8%. And, of course, this is at the end of a week of declines, but it's clearly been precipitated by what preceded today's trading on Wall Street in Europe, right? Things are certainly not encouraging in Europe. Interest rates on Italian debt rose to fresh highs, and the Italian stock exchange plunged. I'm just trying to get a sense here. I've talked to a few economists recently, William Cohan, who suggest that if you sort of connect the dots all around with dysfunctional government in Washington, there's no question of what was achieved out of that near-death experience precipitated by the Tea Party is going to slow the economy, if not grind it to a halt. So there seems to be a lot of factors out there, with Spain and Italy. They're not Greece. Greece is already gone, right? It's gone over the cliff. But Spain and Italy are too big to fail and too big to bail. I mean, that's the third and fourth biggest economies in Europe. So just give us a sense of what's looming out there in terms of these financial icebergs.
Well, there's no question. You look at the yields on Italian debt and on Spanish debt, and they're starting to climb precipitously. I'm sure credit default swaps on those securities are also climbing. That's the insurance that one buys. I mean, you know, since the U.S. solved its or put the bandage on this self-inflicted crisis that we were working on, you know, it's very clear that people want to find the safest a place to put their money. And you see this very interesting decision by Bank of New York Mellon today to start charging, you know, fees on people who keep more than $50 million, you know, in their account. Now, I know that that might apply to you, Ian, but that does not apply to most people. And the fact that they're, you know, going to charge people for safety just indicates, you know, and then if you look at the way the Treasury market is trading and how low the yields are getting there, I mean, 2 weeks ago we were in negative yield territory again, which is something we didn't see until since, you know, September of 08 when the money markets froze. So people are once again very, very nervous, and they're putting their money in what they perceive to be the safest place they can find, which, you know, now on Thursday it is Treasuries. On Monday it may not have been, but on Thursday it is. And so, you know, you have this fear that is now unlike, frankly, in September of 08, which was basically a U.S. problem at that time. Now you've got, you know, economies in Europe sort of imploding. And so people are retreating from that market and putting their money into treasuries. And so the natural thing is to just retreat from, you know, people have seen this movie so many times now, Ian. That, you know, it's just incredible to me. If you think back how many times we've seen these plunges since, you know, October of 87, you know, 24 years ago, you know, how often we get these crazy Wall Street, stock gyrations. The people, you know, are just saying, you know, I don't want to take this kind of risk anymore, and they'll move out of stocks and put their money into treasuries and safer securities and ride it out. And then, but the interesting thing I have to say is that behavior, and you know, for smaller shareholders, you know, the history has also been that if you sold, you know, at these troughs, you lost money because you sort of perfected your losses, and if you just held on, it seems to me that the market, you know, generally will bounce back. It may take time, and that often is what happens. And so just like if you had taken your money out of the stock market in February of 09 when the market hit 6,500, you would have lost the next doubling that occurred from then until now.
So given, William Cohen, that that so much of what happens on the market is driven by perceptions and panic, if you will, and you're suggesting that the small stockholder may be buffaloed into selling, and I don't think a lot of people have the patience and the forbearance to hold on to things when it looks like the whole thing's going down. Now, just when you've got people, some of these fairly prominent Wall Streeters, just in the last couple of days have been saying stuff, and I just want to run them by you quickly. Head of PIMCO, the big bond guy, says that the U.S. economy is like a plane. It's at stall speed. It could just stall and crash. Meredith Whitney, the municipal bonds guru, she's saying that we're in double dip. Now, because of today's activities, the head of strategy at the Royal Bank of Scotland is saying that now the double dip was about 1 in 20, and now it's just down to 1 in 3 as a possibility. Just give us a sense of those kind of predictions.
Well, and then of course it's the likelihood that S&P and Moody's and Fitch will downgrade the AAA rating of the U.S. government, which means that we'll have to pay more in interest expense.
And the Chinese have done that already, haven't they?
Well, the Chinese are basically, you know, moving to shorter and shorter term maturities on their treasuries so that they can avoid long-term risk of our country. You know, but you know, the Chinese and we are sort of attached at the hip. I mean, there's no way out for them at the moment either. They have to believe that we will make good on these payments. But, you know, again, I get back to, you know, Alan Sinai's prediction. And, you know, far be it from me to question, you know, either Mohammed Al-Arian or Bill Gross at PIMCO. They're very smart. But, you know, they're bond guys. They like it when the bond market rallies and prices go up, and you know, so they of course are talking about, you know, making talk to encourage people to, you know, flee to safety and buy into treasury securities and bonds generally. I mean, you know, so again, I mean, yes, and we've engaged, you know, since the November 2010 election. You know, don't forget, elections have consequences, and you know, by electing all these intransigent Tea Party Republicans, you know, we've put ourselves in a position where, you know, basically we're in this total stalemate. So, you know, Bill Gross or Mohammed Al-Aryan, whoever at PIMCO said that, is absolutely right that we're in the danger of stalling out at the moment. But, you know, the question is, you know, is cutting, you know, is drawing attention to our fiscal house being in disorder? I mean, last time we went and did our best to try to balance the budgets, which was during the Clinton administration, in the 93-94 time frame, you know, we got to a balanced budget by the end of the Clinton administration, and the economy was very, very strong. And so, you know, it might be that this recent bill which was passed, which was, of course, flawed because it did not raise taxes to help further reduce the deficit and only cut spending over a long time period, but maybe that nod towards fiscal responsibility will be the kind of message that combined with taking some of the air out of the stock market, will be the kind of message that you know, looks like that corporations in America have been waiting to hear, which is that, you know, for the first time it looks like Washington might be serious about trying to get its fiscal house in order. And again, the last time Washington appeared to be serious about getting its fiscal house in order, which was during the Clinton administration, the economy took off. So it's, you know,
but there's a stalemate there now, William. I mean, on Washington, and I think I just wondered though that we're in danger here of talking about an economy that may be an abstraction to a lot of our listeners, since I don't think the recession ever ended for a lot of people in this country. The only people who seem to have recovered are the very wealthy. And when you talk about double dip, it's you know, to the people that have been unemployed since 2008, it doesn't mean anything. So give us a sense.
I completely agree with you. I mean, it's unconscionable that some of the policies that have been you know, ongoing, you know, between the Congress and the executive branch. I mean, the failure to bring unemployment in line, and the failure to properly stimulate, you know, the economy and you know, get America growing again. I mean, you know, I interviewed Larry Summers at the beginning of the year. He predicted 3.5% growth rate for this year, and you know, obviously we're well below that. So the policies aren't working. But all I'm saying is that, you know, we're at a crucial moment, as we always seem to be, you know, in this economic recovery, and it seems very fragile. But, you know, could it be a double dip recession? Yes, of course it could be a double dip recession. But it could it also be sort of a turning point which signals to corporate America, who've been waiting for a signal for, you know, years now, that Washington is serious about fiscal responsibility? Well, it could be that too. And if it is that, then they're going to start spending some of the $2 trillion of cash that they have on their balance sheets, and they're going to start investing in plant and equipment and hiring people again. And, you know, again, you know, I'm not being sort of argumentative or trying to just take, you know, the contrary position, but, you know, economists, you know, it's dismal sciences, because people don't know, you know, mm-hmm. for sure, they'd never know whether, you know, you're right or not until you're looking in the rearview mirror.
But just in closing, though, William Cohen, it seems to me that there's something else that the markets could be signaling with these drops today, and that is that Washington has just taken $2 trillion out of a sick economy, and that makes no sense economically, and we're going to have less demand, less employment. It's that simple.
Well, I mean, again, there's also $2 trillion in cash sitting on the sidelines in corporate balance sheets that could be put to work if they thought that Washington was serious about fiscal responsibility. You know, the truth is we have a very, very fragile economy. It's very driven by psychology. I do think taking some of the air out of the inflated stock market is a good thing. And, you know, I often find that these kinds of gas releases, while painful, end up working to the benefit of the economy. But our economy is in tough shape. I completely agree with you there. And I don't think anything that's happened in Washington in the last 6 weeks has done anything to help that. What the thing that actually might help at this point, believe it or not, counterintuitively, is some sell-off on Wall Street.
Well, William Cohen, I thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with William Cohen, author of the new book, Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. He's a contributing editor at Fortune, a writer for Vanity Fair and the New York Times. His acclaimed book, House of Cards, Tale of Hubris and Wretched Excess on Wall Street, details the last days of Bear Stearns and Company, and he worked on Wall Street for over a decade and a half, both at Lazard, Frere, and J.P. Morgan Chase. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back at talking with economist Randall Ray.
Your cares and troubles are gone. There'll be no more from now on. Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again.